Chapter 4 Miller. Miller was halfway through his evening meal when the system in his hold chirped. He glanced at the sending code. The Blue Frog. It was a port bar catering to the constant extra million non-citizens of Ceres that advertised itself as a near-exact replica of a famous Earth bar in Mumbai, only with licensed prostitutes and legal drugs. Miller took another forkful of fungal beans and vat-grown rice and debated whether to accept connection. "Should have seen this one coming," he thought. "What?" he asked. A screen popped open. Hassini, the assistant manager, was a dark-skinned man with eyes the color of ice. The near smirk on his face was the result of nerve damage. Miller had done him a favor when Hassini had had the poor judgment to take pity on an unlicensed prostitute. Since then, security detective and portside barman had traded favors. The unofficial gray economics of civilization. "Your partner's here again," Hassini said over the pulse and wail of Bhangra music. "I think he's having a bad night. Should I keep serving him?" "Yeah," Miller said. "Keep him happy for... give me 20 minutes. "He doesn't want to be kept happy. He very much wants a reason to get unhappy." "Make it hard to find. I'll be there." Hassini nodded, smirking his damaged smirk, and dropped the connection. Miller looked at his half-eaten meal, sighed, and shoved the remains into the recycling bin. He pulled on a clean shirt, then hesitated. The Blue Frog was always warmer than he liked, and he hated wearing a jacket. Instead, he put a compact plastic pistol in his ankle holster. Not as fast a draw, but if it got that far, he was screwed anyway. Ceres at night was indistinguishable from Ceres in the daytime. There had been a move, back when the station first opened, to dim and brighten the lights through the traditional human 24-hour cycle, mimicking the spin of Earth. The affectation had lasted 4 months before the council killed it. On duty, Miller would have taken an electric cart down the wide tunnels and down to the port levels. He was tempted, even though he was off duty, but a deep-seated superstition stopped him. If he took the cart, he was going as a cop, and the tubes ran just fine. Miller walked to the nearest station, checked the status, and sat on the low stone bench. A man about Miller's age and a girl no more than 3 came in a minute later and sat across from him. The girl's talk was as fast and meaningless as a leaking seal, and her father responded with grunts and nods at more or less appropriate moments. Miller and the new man nodded to each other. The girl tugged at her father's sleeve, demanding his attention. Miller looked at her. Dark eyes, pale hair, smooth skin. She was already too tall to be mistaken for an Earth child, her limbs longer and thinner. Her skin had the pink flush of Belter babies, which came with the pharmaceutical cocktail that assured that their muscles and bones would grow strong. Miller saw the father notice his attention. Miller smiled and nodded toward the kid. "How old?" he asked. 2 1/2, the father said. "Good age." The father shrugged, but he smiled. "Kids?" he asked. "No," Miller said. "But I've got a divorce about that old." They chuckled together as if it was funny. In his imagination, Candace crossed her arms and looked away. The soft, oil and ozone-scented breeze announced the tube's arrival. Miller let father and child go first, then chose a different compartment. The tube cars were round, built to fit into the evacuated passages. There were no windows. The only view would have been stone humming by 3 centimeters from the car. Instead, broad screens advertised entertainment feeds or commented on inner-planet political scandals or offered the chance to gamble away a week's pay at casinos so wonderful that your life would seem richer for the experience. Miller let the bright, empty colors dance and ignored their content. Mentally, he was holding up his problem, turning it one way and then the other, not even looking for an answer. It was a simple mental exercise. Look at the facts without judgment. Havelock was an earther. Havelock was in a portside bar again and looking for a fight. Havelock was his partner. Statement after statement, fact after fact, facet after facet. He didn't try to put them in order or make some kind of narrative out of them. That would all come later. Now it was enough to wash the day's cases out of his head and get ready for the immediate situation. By the time the tube reached his station, he felt centered. Like he was walking on his whole foot, was how he'd described it, back when he had anyone to describe it to. The Blue Frog was crowded, the barn heat of bodies adding to the fake Mumbai temperature and artificial air pollution. Lights glittered and flashed in seizure-inducing display. Tables curved and undulated, the backlight making them seem darker than merely black. Music moved through the air with a physical presence, each beat a little concussion. Hassini, standing in a clot of steroid-enhanced bouncers and underdressed serving girls, caught Miller's eyes and nodded toward the back. Miller didn't acknowledge anything. He just turned and made his way through the crowd. Port bars were always volatile. Miller was careful not to bump into anyone if he could help it. When he had to choose, he'd run into belters before inner planet types, women before men. His face was a constant, mild apology. Havelock was sitting alone, with one thick hand wrapping a fluted glass. When Miller sat down beside him, Havelock turned toward him, ready to take offense, nostrils flared and eyes wide. Then the surprise registered. Then something like sullen shame. "Miller," he said. In the tunnels outside, he would have been shouting. Here it was barely enough to carry as far as Miller's chair. "What are you doing here?" "Nothing much to do at the hole," Miller said. "Thought I'd come pick a fight." "Good night for it," Havelock said. It was true. Even in the bars that catered to interplanet types, the mix was rarely better than one Earther or Martian in 10. Squinting out at the crowd, Miller saw that the short, stocky men and women were nearer a third. "Ship come in?" he asked. "Yeah." "EMCN?" he asked. The Earth-Mars Coalition Navy often passed through Ceres on its way to Saturn, Jupiter, and the stations of the belt, but Miller hadn't been paying enough attention to the relative position of the planets to know where the orbits all stood. Havelock shook his head. "Corporate security rotating out of Eros," he said. "Protogen, I think." A serving girl appeared at Miller's side, tattoos gliding over her skin, her teeth glowing in the black light. Miller took the drink she offered him, though he hadn't ordered. Soda water. "You know," Miller said, leaning close enough to Havelock that even his normal conversational voice would reach the man, "it doesn't matter how many of their asses you kick, Shadid's still not going to like you." Havelock snapped to stare at Miller, the anger in his eyes barely covering the shame and hurt. "It's true," Miller said. Havelock rose, lurching to his feet, and headed for the door. He was trying to stomp, but in the Ceres' spin gravity and his inebriated state, he misjudged. It looked like he was hopping. Miller, glass in hand, slid through the crowd in Havelock's wake, calming with a smile and a shrug the affronted faces that his partner left behind him. The common tunnels down near the port had a layer of grime and grease to them that air scrubbers and astringent cleaners could never quite master. Havelock walked out, shoulders hunched, mouth tight, rage radiating from him like heat. But the doors of the Blue Frog closed behind them, the seal cutting off the music like someone hitting mute. The worst of the danger had passed. "I'm not drunk," Havelock said, his voice too loud. "Didn't say you were." "And you," Havelock said, turning and stabbing an accusing finger at Miller's chest. "You are not my nanny." "Also true." They walked together for maybe a quarter of a kilometer. The bright LED signs beckoned. Brothels and shooting galleries, coffee bars and poetry clubs, casinos and show fights. The air smelled like piss and old food. Havelock began to slow, his shoulders coming down from around his ears. "I worked homicide in Tarrytown," Havelock said. "I did 3 years vice at L5. Do you have any idea what that was like? They were shipping kids out of there, and I'm one of three guys that stopped it. I'm a good cop."
"Yes, you are."
"I'm damn good."
"You are."
They walked past a noodle bar, a coffin hotel, a public terminal, its displays running a free news feed. "Communication problems plague Phoebe Science Station. New Andreas K game net $6 billion in 4 hours. No deal in Mars, Belt Titanium contract." The screens glowed in Havelock's eyes, but he was staring past them. "I'm a damn good cop," he said again. Then a moment later, "So what the hell?"
"It's not about you," Miller said. "People look at you, they don't see Dmitri Havelock, good cop, they see Earth."
"That's crap. I was 8 years in the orbitals and on Mars before I ever shipped out here. I worked on Earth maybe 6 months total."
"Earth, Mars, they're not that different," Miller said.
"Try telling that to a Martian," Havelock said with a bitter laugh. "They'll kick your ass for you."
"I didn't mean... Look, I'm sure there are all kinds of differences. Earth hates Mars for having a better fleet. Mars hates Earth for having a bigger one. Maybe soccer's better in full G, maybe it's worse, I don't know. I'm just saying anyone this far out from the sun, they don't care. From this distance, you can cover Earth and Mars with one thumb. And I don't belong," Havelock said.
The door of the noodle bar behind them opened, and four belters in gray-green uniforms came out. One of them wore the split circle of the OPA on his sleeve. Miller tensed, but the belters didn't come toward them, and Havelock didn't notice them. Near miss.
"I knew," Havelock said, "when I took the Star Helix contract, I knew I'd have to work to fit in. I thought it'd be the same as anywhere, you know? You go, you get your chops busted for a while, then when they see you can take it, they treat you like one of the team. It's not like that here."
"It's not," Miller said. Havelock shook his head, spat, and stared at the fluted glass in his hand.
"I think we just stole some glasses from the Blue Frog," Havelock said.
"We're also in a public corridor with unsealed alcohol," Miller said.
"Well, you are, anyway. Mine's soda water."
Havelock chuckled, but there was despair in the sound. When Havelock spoke again, his voice was only rueful.
"You think I'm coming down here picking fights with people from the inner planets so that Shadid and Ramachandra and all the rest of them will think better of me?"
"It occurred to me."
"You're wrong," Havelock said.
"Okay," Miller said.
He knew he wasn't. Havelock raised his fluted glass.
"Take these back?" he asked.
"How about Distinguished Hyacinth?" Miller countered.
"I'll buy."
The Distinguished Hyacinth Lounge was up three levels, far enough that foot traffic from the port levels was minimal, and it was a cop bar. Mostly Star Helix security, but some of the minor corporate forces, Protogen, Pinkwater, a la Beak, hung out there too. Miller was more than half certain that his partner's latest breakdown had been averted, but if he was wrong, better to keep it in the family. The decor was pure belt. Old-style ship's folding tables and chairs set into the wall and ceiling as if the gravity might shut off at any moment. Snake plant and devil's ivy, staples of first-generation air recycling, decorated the wall and freestanding columns. The music was soft enough to talk over, loud enough to keep private conversations private. The first owner, Javier Liot, was a structural engineer from Tyco who'd come out during the big spin and liked Ceres enough to stay. His grandchildren ran it now. Javier III was standing behind the bar, talking with half of the vice and exploitation team.
Miller led the way to a back table, nodding to the men and women he knew as he passed. While he'd been careful and diplomatic at the Blue Frog, he chose a bluff masculinity here. It was just as much a pose. "So," Havelock said as Javier's daughter Kate, a fourth generation for the same bar, left the table, Blue Frog glasses on her tray. "What is this super-secret private investigation Shadid put you on? Or is the lowly earther not supposed to know?" "Is that what got to you?" Miller asked. "It's nothing. Some shareholders misplaced their daughter and want me to track her down, ship her home. It's a bullshit case." "Sounds more like their backyard," Havelock said, nodding toward the V&E crowd. "Kid's not a minor," Miller said. "It's a kidnap job." "And you're good with that?" Miller sat back. The ivy above them waved. Havelock waited, and Miller had the uncomfortable sense that a table had just been turned. "It's my job," Miller said. "Yeah, but we're talking about an adult here, right? It's not like she couldn't go back home if she wanted to be there. But instead, her parents get security to take her home whether she wants to go or not. That's not law enforcement anymore. It's not even station security. It's just dysfunctional families playing power games." Miller remembered the thin girl beside her racing pinnace, her broad smile. "I told you it was a bullshit case," Miller said. Kate Leo returned to the table with a local beer and a glass of whiskey on her tray. Miller was glad for the distraction. The beer was his, light and rich and just the faintest bit bitter. An ecology based on yeasts and fermentation meant subtle brews. Havelock was nursing his whiskey. Miller took it as a sign that he was giving up on his bender. Nothing like being around the boys from the office to take the charm out of losing control. "Hey, Miller! Havelock!" a familiar voice said. "Yevgeny Cobb from Homicide." Miller waved him over, and the conversation turned to the Homicide's bragging about the resolution of a particularly ugly case. 3 months' work figuring out where the toxins came from, ending with the corpse's wife awarded the full insurance settlement and a gray market whore deported back to Eros. By the end of the night, Havelock was laughing and trading jokes along with the rest of them. If there was occasionally a narrowed glance or a subtle dig, he took it in stride. Miller was on his way up to the bar for another round when his terminal chimed. And then, slowly throughout the bar, 50 other chimes sounded. Miller felt his belly knot as he and every other security agent in the place pulled out their terminals. Captain Shadid was on the broadcast screen. Her eyes were bleary and filled with banked rage. She was the very picture of a woman of power wakened early from sleep. "Ladies and gentlemen," she said, "whatever you're doing, drop it and go to your stations for emergency orders. We have a situation." 10 minutes ago, an unencrypted, signed message came in from the rough direction of Saturn. "We haven't confirmed it is true, but the signature matches the keys on record. I've put a hold on it, but we can assume some asshole's going to put it on the network and the shit should hit the fan about 5 minutes after that. If you're in earshot of a civilian, turn off now. For the rest of you, here's what we're up against." Shadid moved to one side, tapping her system interface. The screen went black. A moment later, a man's face and shoulders appeared. He was in an orange vacuum suit with the helmet off. An earther, maybe in his early 30s. Pale skin, blue eyes, dark, short-cropped hair. Even before the man opened his mouth, Miller saw the signs of shock and rage in his eyes and the way he held his head forward. "My name," the man said, "is James Holden."